For today, we are on to Luke chapter 12, verses 13 to 21. And if you've turned there in your Bibles, we can read about a family issue, certainly. Someone in the crowd, so this is just after Jesus talking about the Pharisees and just given his stern list of woes to the Pharisees and lawyers. And then someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or an arbiter over you?" And he said to them, now to his disciples, I think, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness or greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." So apparently this was something that happened regularly in Jesus' day, that a rabbi or teacher going around, people would come and try to get them to intercede in family disputes. And here we have people in the farming community, it's an all too familiar kind of dispute. One brother and another brother, their dad has died, and now they're wrangling over the farm, the inheritance. And this guy, it's a little bit like he's sort of like, "Hey, you know, tell my brother to do this." It's a little demanding because he hasn't said, "Like, you know, here's the issues, please decide." He's just like, "Jesus, I'm here listening to you. Hey, do me a favor. Go talk to my brother. Maybe he'll listen to you." Certainly doesn't listen to me. And there is something so key here, is that Jesus isn't talking about the problems of these big rich guys out here, but he's talking about a very simple, everyday problem. You know, how to divide the inheritance. Something where, you know, you can make an argument. You know, I'm the guy asking for the division. He's just like, "I'm just asking for what's right, just asking for what's fair." But Jesus said, there is something more dangerous here than you not getting your money, and that is the greed in your heart. But Jesus isn't talking about a big rich guy out here. He's talking about someone who doesn't have a lot, but wants to have more than God has given him. And we see that the love of money is more dangerous than not having any. This guy's biggest problem is not his lack of funds, but the fact that he wants that more than he probably wants a good relationship with his brother. So often so easy to self-justify greed. Be like, you know, this is just the right thing to do. And it's this subtle thing in this guy's heart where he cares about money more than he cares about his family relationship. So often, yeah, parents die and people start wrangling over things, and it can get ugly really fast. And everyone talks about their rights instead of looking in love to the interests of others. You know, love sometimes will say, you know, just take it all. It'd be like the mother who, dividing the child, and she's just like, "Just take the child. I'd rather let someone else have her than have the child die." Jesus wants us to be careful about money. And it's not just the Wall Street tycoon. You think about all those other people out there who need to be concerned about money, but you know, "I'm just a poor guy trying to make it." He's concerned about every one of us because we're all prone to wanting more than God has given us. And money can cause us to stumble. He says, "Watch out take care, be on your guard. Very strong language. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. To which we remember that you are not your Lexus. You're not your Lexus. You're not your Lexus. You're not that thing. And it's something we all know. This is like the simplest thing, but we need to be reminded of it constantly because we're constantly finding our self-worth in what we have. Walk around thinking, like, you know, I'm now, this is such a difference between, yeah, I always found this such a difference between, I was bivocational, and so part of my life I was going to pastors' conferences as the pastor of the smallest church. And like, nobody listens to what you have to say, everybody's like waiting to hear. Then I would go to farmer conferences as like the owner of one of the biggest dairy farms in Manitoba, and all of a sudden everyone's like, oh boy, what are you doing? This is really interesting. Everyone pays more attention to you because they perceive you as being wealthy, and that changes how they listen. You know, wealth is, it's a funny thing, because, you know, everybody kind of thinks that they're middle class. This is why politicians, they exploit this. They're always talking about, you know, I'm for the middle class. And everyone's sitting there, and they're saying, well, I'm middle class. I once had a friend of mine, and he really loved a certain politician. Okay, it's Justin Trudeau. And he was like, it was all good. He was like, showed his book, and he was just sort of like, you know, Justin is just going to tax those rich people and, you know, and build up the middle class. Now, all of a sudden, you know, politics change, and all of a sudden he realizes that those rich people that they're talking about taxing was him. And I was like, you know, you have four cars. You know, why did you think you were middle class? But the thing, we very quickly, we think that we're just, because we live in a neighborhood and we're probably not the richest in the neighborhood, you know, saying, oh, that person out there, they're the rich ones. But on a global scale, like if you drove here today in your own car, you're a wealthy person. Whenever you have anything, you're tempted to make your life about it. I was just reading the book of Job this week. And the book of Job, there's an amazing part about it, because Job makes this point that when he was rich, this was the situation, when he's rich, men listened to me and waited and kept silent and kept silence for my counsel. After I spoke, they did not speak again, and my word dropped upon them. And so when he was rich, everybody listened, everybody respected him, but now his money's taken away. Like, he's the same guy, but now his money's taken away. But now they laugh at me, men who are younger than I, whose fathers I would have disdained to set with the dogs of my flock. Job was the same guy when he was a millionaire and when he had nothing. And yet one person was laughed at, and we need to be careful of the same thing. So often we listen to a wealthy person just because they're wealthy. Money cannot make the fool wise. And you are not your Lexus. Don't think differently about yourself because of your money, or differently of others. Now Jesus, in the face of this man who's covetous, told this parable. And he told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. And he said, I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and all my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry, or party. My wife loves this verse because I had this tendency every time. Every year or so on my dairy farm, I would like draw up new plans for how we were going to double the size of the barn. I'd have everything laid out, and I'd like look at all this. We're going to have this cool, like, flush system. I've looked at these designs online. And then Kari would say, the parable of the rich fool who tore down his barns. And I was like, oh, darn, what, you're using the Bible against me. Now, in this story, again, we have something that's so perfectly reasonable. After all, God has blessed this man. You know, God sent rain. There's rain coming sometime. And he grew all of these crops so much so he did not have places to store them. He's probably a very large farmer because it's talking about his land, which is sort of like his like, it's a, it's not just a plot of land, but a large piece of land. And we see him doing something perfectly reasonable. Hey, I don't have place to store my crops. Let's build bigger ones. This is the most reasonable thing. I tend to think permanent grain storage is a good investment for a farmer. And so he does this perfectly reasonable thing. And again, we think of the dangers of riches. We think of like Scrooge McDuck diving in off the diving board into his big like pile of money. It's not talking about that. It's talking about a farmer building an extra set of grain bins. And we see something very wrong with this man's heart. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all of my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. My. What you own is not your own. What you own is not your own because it is God's crop that he blessed him with. It is God's barn, it is God's grain, it is God's good, and ultimately it is God's soul that one day is going to get called in. 1 Corinthians 6:19, you are not your own, you were bought with a price. Psalm 50:10, for every beast of the forest is mine, declares the Lord. The cattle on 1,000 hills, I know all the birds of the hills and all that moves in the field is mine. It is all God's. From the ant to even Scrooge McDuck's money bins, if it existed in the world. This is an attitude that so infects our hearts. And one need not look past the nursery when you have two toys. And very quickly, it's, I want to play with that. Mine! Mine! It's like you weren't even playing with that 3 seconds. Mine, now that she wants it. I'm not giving it up ever. Until I get bored, then I'm gonna not even care about it anymore. There is a golem in every person's heart. As soon as you get a possession, this is my precious, my precious. This is mine, and I'm never giving it up. And as we grow, these things grow. We get a car, and it's my car. We get a house, and it's my house. But meanwhile, God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills, and he owns your car, he owns your house, he owns you. And the sooner you get the mine out of your heart, the sooner you will be able to start being rich towards God instead of selfish indulgence. What you own is not your own. What you own is not your own. Now he says, I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. Now this isn't just Jesus ragging on people who were spending all of their time making money. Be like, he's just all about the money. Because this is also a criticism of how we use our time, how we use our goods. Because now he says, you know, I've got all this stuff. I'm just going to live for myself. And you can make this mistake, and young people, I mean, I saw this when I was in college, that in rejecting kind of this Western Protestant work ethic that we're just going to accumulate and get stuff, work really hard. Instead, I'm not going to go to engineering school. I'm going to go to art school, follow my heart, live this sort of bohemian dream. And yet it's the same sort of selfish indulgence. It's all about spending my time the way I want to spend it instead of realizing that what I own is not my own, even my time. Because God's gifts are not for self-indulgent living. And this goes for wealthy people, this goes for poor people. God's gifts are not for self-indulgent living. This man's problem is not that God has blessed him. God has truly blessed him. His problem is that he thinks these blessings are for his enjoyment, his party, his pleasure day by day, instead of the truth. This is a truth we should all remember every time that God blesses us, that God blesses us in order to bless others. The blessing of God is given to us in order to bless others. In this like idea, eat, drink, relax, and be merry, is the biggest problem in North America today among Christians. That we live primarily for comfort and pleasure, and fill in God around the edges. And the things that we might do, and this is, I mean, the best example of this is the mission trip, which is like 3 days on the beach and a photo op at an orphanage. So you can live for yourself on Wall Street or a hippie commune. But God calls us not just to look out for our own interests, but to look out for the interests of others. He blesses us to bless. Verse 20, the kicker. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be? You know who's going to own his things? This is the question you got to ask. Who's going to own his things? His kids, who are now going to argue about them, like the guy that just came and talked to Jesus. And so even the one thing he thought might be a blessing to his family, the money, the inheritance, is just going to be something that's going to drive his family apart and infect them with the same kind of self-indulgent greed that doomed himself. Now, we know that you can't take it with you when you go, but boy, do people try. I think about the ancient pharaohs. They're buried with their jewels and their gold decked out all around them. You know where those things are? They're sitting in the Louvre for some French kid to scoff at, if they let people into the Louvre right now, or the British Museum. Now, according to some random website, which I don't know is authoritative, but the top five most exclusive items in the world that you can purchase are five was this pink diamond, this huge diamond worth $23 million. Put in your pocket. The painting, the card players, which sold for $260 million. It's a cool quarter billion. Maybe, who likes cars? Who likes vintage cars? There's people like vintage cars. A 1963 Ferrari GTO for $53 million. There's apparently a home, this is somewhere in Asia, Antilla, I think it's in India, which is a home worth $1 billion. Now you're gonna like fill out a mortgage application, $1 billion. And maybe the perhaps mythical Yacht History Supreme, which is a yacht plated with 100,000 kilograms of gold and platinum. It has statues made of T-Rex bone, wine glasses of 18 karat diamond worth $4.5 billion. And you know what? All of these things will be worth on the day when God asks for your soul back. Well, we're going to let Lawrence Tarand, you probably know him better as Mr. T. I pity the fool that thinks that money can save his soul. I see him and I pity him. I pity the fool. Mr. T, you are my hero. Sorry for the bad impression. Yeah, if you're not going to listen to him, I don't know who you're going to listen to. Maybe Jesus. So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. This wealthy man was not unfortunate in dying early, but he was actually a fool because he thought his possessions were for his pleasure. He was a fool. Now, the one question for each of us to ask is, how can we be rich toward God? Well, Jesus tells us in Luke 18, 22. To the rich young ruler, he said, one thing you lack, sell all that you have and distribute to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. If you want to be rich towards God, in the words of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, give it away, give it away, give it away now. It's your house, your car, your farm, your retirement fund. It is all God's to set aside for God's purposes. And giving it away, using it for God's business. This is how day by day we are rich toward God. Because on one day, maybe tonight, maybe sometime far into the future, your soul is coming due. And every investment you made here on earth will be worth zero on that day. And every investment you made above will be worth more than you could ever imagine. And so, let's not be fools, but be rich toward God. Amen.